Brothers, our first object of our business this afternoon is, as we mentioned this morning, following the election of Archbishop Vigneron as our new vice president, who will assume the position on Thursday following the final adjournment from the general meeting, we need to fill his soon-to-be vacant position as conference secretary and chairman of the Committee on Priorities and Plans. To this end, the Committee on Priorities and Plans met over lunch to fulfill their duty as the conference's nominations committee. They have completed their task, and now we are pleased to have two bishops who have accepted. In addition, our parliamentarian, Archbishop Schnur, has informed me that the bylaws direct that the term of office of the bishop elected to replace Archbishop Vigneron as conference secretary will be through the remainder of Archbishop Vigneron's elected term, which is through November 2021, or 2 years. And so at this time, unless there are any further questions, I would ask Archbishop Vigneron to place the names in nomination.
Thank you, Cardinal DiNardo. The nominees for the position of Conference Secretary and Chairman of the Committee on Priorities and Plans are Archbishop Timothy P. Broglio and Bishop Daniel E. Thomas.
Those are the names put forth by the Committee on Priorities and Plans. Like a committee chair, secretary, and treasurer of the conference, there can be nominations from the floor as well. Before we take the vote, do I hear any nominations from the brothers? Oh, no, it's not a nomination. Okay, well then we'll go through to voting. Monsignor Bransfield.
So, Your Eminences, Your Excellencies, the ballot is before you. Please vote one for Archbishop Broglio, two for Bishop Daniel Thomas. We will open the voting. The voting is open. Please vote now. Simple majority. Voting is closed, and we will now tally the vote. Archbishop Broglio is elected Secretary of the Conference at the close of the assembly.
I would now call Bishop Kevin Rhodes, the Committee on Doctrine, to come forward for an action required coming from the Doctrine Committee. Relative to a request we have had from the French Bishops Conference, actually this request directly comes from God, so.
Thank you, Your Eminence. I'm grateful for this time to address you, my brothers. As you'll see in your supplemental documentation labeled action item number 9, the purple handout at your places, we've been asked to support a petition by the Cardinal Archbishop of Lyon asking the Holy Father to name Saint Irenaeus as a doctor of the church. I imagine like me, many of you had to think about that for a moment, thinking that surely he already was a doctor of the church. So this petition is perhaps a way to correct an oversight of history. The process for such a petition requires the originator of the cause to solicit a broad coalition of support, mostly from various national episcopal conferences, demonstrating a universal acceptance of granting a particular saint this title. Born between 120 130 AD in Smyrna, Asia Minor, St. Irenaeus was a disciple of St. Polycarp, who himself was a disciple of St. John the Apostle. Bishop Irenaeus's work as a pastor, teacher, and writer continues to resonate down to our own times, as we see a reemergence of Gnostic ideas and confusing views of what it means to be human. In his writings, St. Irenaeus also consistently upheld the unity of God in three persons, the unity of salvation history, and the unity of the church from the 12 apostles onward. The Second Vatican Council cited St. Irenaeus 14 times, second only to Augustine among the church fathers cited. Because of his great contribution to how the church understands and thinks theologically, I ask that we support the petition of the Cardinal Archbishop of Lyon in naming this theologian, bishop, martyr, and saint a doctor of the church. And Your Eminence, at this time, if be open to any
We're open to any observations or questions about either this process or about St. Irenaeus.
In the back is Monsignor Steenson.
Monsignor Steenson.
Thank you, Your Eminence, and thank you, dear brothers in Christ, for the privilege of being able to be with you and to speak with you. I had to stand up with St. Irenaeus today. In Oxford, we were not permitted to say Irenaeus. It was Irenaeus, but we're on the thing. St. Irenaeus has meant so much to many of the people that have been with me in coming into full communion in the Catholic Church. He was the one that wrote that magnificent piece in Against Heresies, where he said, "It is necessary that all churches be in accord with this particular church, the Church of Rome, on account of her more excellent apostolic foundations. Propter potentiorum principalitatem," though he would have written that in Greek, but it is, he said, we can just cut to the quick and we can find in communion with the Church of Rome what it means to have apostolic authenticity. And he had a wonderful way of speaking about the dynamic nature of apostolic tradition. Where the Holy Spirit is, there is the church. And where the church is, there is the Holy Spirit and all graces. That's always meant so much to me, because when we live through times in the life of the church where things seem to be falling apart, these old broken down bones, when the Holy Spirit comes and fills them, that vessel is renewed again. And so St. Irenaeus, I think, is an incredibly important patron and saint to us today in the work of rebuilding the Church of God. And one last thing, Your Eminence, you appreciate this. We've had many conversations about this. St. Irenaeus is the first systematic theologian of the Church. He is literally the first text that we have that speaks about the role of the Blessed Virgin Mary in the life of the church and in the life of the faithful. Mary is the new Eve. She is the one who untied those knots that were tied up by the first Eve because of her disobedience. And I remember with so much appreciation how a young man named Jorge Bergoglio, when he was studying in Germany, encountered this devotion to Mary the Untier of Knots and brought this devotion back to our side of the world. This all came from St. Irenaeus. It all came from him. And when we say that Mary is the mother of the church, this is the first theologian that really lays out why Mary is the mother of the church. So I just thank you for the privilege of standing up for St. Irenaeus or St. Irenaeus today. Thank you.
Thank you, Monsignor. Thank you. Very eloquently and beautifully stated. I could never add anything to your comments, particularly on the unity of the Church in Rome, so powerful in St. Irenaeus. But in addition to all those really brilliant things he has a really funny thing. He was hysterically writing on certain people, namely the Gnostics. He's the only one I know who made jokes about them in his writing in the midst of very serious theology. Anybody who does that can't be all bad. So, Bishop Rhodes.
Okay, thank you. So, the question, do the bishops of the United States support the request of Cardinal Philippe Barberin of Lyon, asking the Holy Father to name St. Irenaeus a doctor of the Church?
We'll make this a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And any abstentions? Thank God we'd have to have a trial for heresy.
No Gnostics.
I think we've got it unanimous.
Thank you, Your Eminence. Thank you, brothers. Good.
I would now ask Bishop Cepeda to join Bishop Perez, the Committee on Cultural Diversity in the Church, for a discussion and presentation on a report of the follow-up on the Fifth Encuentro.
Brother Bishops, over the past 3 years, we have walked together on the journey of the Fifth National Encuentro for Hispanic Ministry. The Fifth Encuentro process has generated many fruits in our parishes and dioceses. It has also been a moment of grace and a source of abundant joy and hope, not only for our Hispanic brothers and sisters, but for the entire church. As we enter the fourth and final year of the Fifth Encuentro process, we want to give you an update of all things Fifth Encuentro and next steps. Once again, I invite Bishop Cepeda, Chairman of the Subcommittee for Hispanic Affairs, to update you on recent accomplishments and next steps of the Fifth Encuentro process.
Once again, I'm back. Well, dear Brother Bishops, it is with a sense of gratitude that I share with you this update on the Quinto Encuentro. The Encuentro process has reached another benchmark with the publication of the proceedings and conclusions of the Quinto Nacional Encuentro of Hispanic Latino Ministry. The 232-page document contains the most up-to-date statistics on Hispanic Catholics, along with recommendations, best practices, and resources generated through the Quinto Encuentro consultation process. The document is a resource meant to assist dioceses and parishes in pastoral planning as they generate pastoral responses to the vision and recommendations emerging from the Quinto Encuentro. You will receive courtesy copies of the document, both in English and in Spanish, with a November bishop's mailing. We are also developing an e-resource with videos and graphics to accompany the document and to make its contents more user-friendly. The e-resources will be available by the end of November on the Quinto Encuentro website. We are also very grateful for the opportunity to share the good news of the proceedings and conclusions document with the Holy Father. On September 18, we met with Pope Francis and gave him copies of the proceedings and conclusions document, along with a copy of the resource Creating a Culture of Encounter. The Holy Father received the documents with interest and offered words of encouragement. Sigan adelante, he said. continue to go forth. Our 15-member delegation, which included several young adults, also met with the heads of different dicasteries and pontifical councils. Their response to the vision and fruits of the Quinto Encuentro was very positive. They were impressed and offered words of affirmation about the way the Quinto Encuentro process was carried out in a synodal way as an implementation of Evangelii Gaudium in the church in the United States. So the question is, where are we now in the four-year Quinto Encuentro process? The next step in the process is the celebration of regional in-services in 14 episcopal regions. Some of them have already taken place, while other regions will hold their in-service during 2020. The main goal of the in-services is to train diocesan staff to use the proceedings and conclusions document as a tool for pastoral planning so that dioceses continue to generate pastoral responses to the Quinto Encuentro recommendations to complement plans and activities already in progress. As the Quinto Encuentro enters its final year, we invite you to hold a one-day diocesan encuentro during 2020. Ideally, this encuentro should take place during Hispanic Heritage Month, which starts on September 15 and ends October 15. The goals of the diocesan encuentro include: 1, to celebrate our Catholic faith and achievements of the Quinto Encuentro process in your own dioceses. 2, to identify new priorities and pastoral responses in your dioceses using the proceedings and conclusions document as a tool. 3, to document and collect initiatives developed as a result of the Quinto Encuentro process. 4, to continue the missionary work inspired by Evangelii Gaudium through the use of the resources, creating a culture of encounter and other resources. At the national level, we continue to prepare the ground to work on 3 bold new initiatives in response to the Quinto Encuentro process. 1, the development of a family ministry vision and resources for Hispanic Latino families. 2, identification and sharing of best practices in Hispanic Latino ministry for dioceses and parishes. 3, an Encuentro social media campaign. In addition, our work continues on the development of the Quinto Encuentro Youth and Young Adult Leadership Initiative, BEYALI. This is the first and most significant national initiative that is a direct pastoral response to the Quinto Encuentro process. The goal of BEYALI is to form Hispanic Latino young adults and adults working with Hispanic Latino youth and young adults through a solid certification program and to create a pathway towards degree programs. We will share more detailed information on these initiatives as it becomes available. Finally, we will begin preparing the ground for the development of a comprehensive formal statement on Hispanic ministry as a pastoral response to the recommendation of the Quinto Encuentro. and I thank you for expressing your support for this initiative early today. Brother Bishops, thank you once again for making the Quinto Encuentro such a fruitful and successful ecclesial process. Muchas gracias.
Thank you for the update, Bishop Cepeda. We now invite your questions on the Fifth Encuentro update.
Brothers, any comments, questions for Bishop Perez or for Bishop Cepeda? Let's see, right now. Cardinal Tobin, followed by Bishop Olmsted.
Thank you for continuing the great work of this Encuentro. I think one of the challenges, at least that we experience in our archdiocese, is how you conjugate the directions that were set at the Encuentro with the overall diocesan plan. And so I think as you go forward, and especially in that statement on ministry, if you can consider pastoral planning, you know, that it has two very rich streams, but we want to bring them together. So thanks.
As part of the process of consultation and listening of the Quinto Encuentro, I think that, as we all know, there's a good number of dioceses, archdioceses, they are already having their pastoral plan. The proceedings and the conclusions of the Quinto Encuentro can be used as tools to complement the plan. And I find that will be the way to have our own people, as they continue with being faithful to a diocesan and archdiocesan plan, to complement their presence and their own resolutions to bring fruits to the diocese.
Bishop Olmsted, followed by Bishop Neverez.
Thank you very much for your presentation, and I very much agree with one of your last points, Bishop Cepeda, and that is for the leadership. We really need to train leaders, not so much within the parish as within society. So learning how, as they begin to enter into careers in law, in medicine, or whatever it is, to be leaders there, to be able to fulfill well professionally, but also to be alive in their faith, their love of Jesus, and their ability to engage others with that and draw them into the beauty of the gospel. So thank you very much. It's a great initiative.
Bishop Neverez.
I think it's been mentioned, the prayer is that the fruit of this Quinto Encuentro and all that's been experienced will not only revive and animate the Hispanic part of the church, but then every community would be able to learn and integrate some of these beautiful fruits to enliven each of their different membership.
Any other brothers? Seeing none, any final statements, Bishop Perez?
Yes, thank you so much, Your Eminence. Before I go, I do want to take this opportunity to extend a cordial invitation to all of you to join me and the Committee on Cultural Diversity in the Church at Journeying Together, an intercultural encounter of ministries with youth and young adults. The effort, which is part of our current strategic plan, hopes to convene about 400 young adults, youth ministers, campus ministers of all cultural and ethnic backgrounds with bishops and national organizations. This will be a more intimate setting than other recent events, such as the convocation of Catholic leaders and the Fifth Encuentro. It is my hope that many of you will have an interest in having a conversation with these young adult Catholics and those who minister among our young people. This dialogue is also meant to facilitate an intercultural discussion of the Holy Father's apostolic exhortation, Christus Vivit, How is it taking root in their different realities, and how it may be potentiated even more among young Catholics of all cultural, ethnic, and socioeconomic backgrounds in the United States? I look forward to welcoming many of you to Cleveland at John Carroll University on July 23rd through the 26th of 2020. So please mark your calendars. More information will come to you very soon via the bishop's website and other means of communications. Thanks again. God bless you.
Thanks. Thank you, Bishop Perez and Bishop Cepeda. We're now going to the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth. Archbishop Chaput will be coming forward and giving us, and this is an extensive time for discussion, an update on the development of the pastoral plan / framework for marriage and family life ministry and advocacy.
Dear brothers, this is one of two presentations I'm doing this afternoon. I apologize in advance for any boredom. Joining me here are Dominic Lombardi and Julia Dzelski of the committee. They're going to be available to help with any questions you might have. Your Eminence, thank you very much for this opportunity. Brothers, good afternoon. On behalf of the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth, I am pleased to present this update concerning the development of a pastoral plan or framework for marriage and family life ministry and advocacy. You may recall that the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth was entrusted with developing this document in the light of Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation on the joy of love, Amoris Laetitia. That seems like a long time ago. The original timeline had expected a final review and vote from this body at the present General Assembly. However, due to new priorities and schedule changes at the past assemblies, a few committees were unable to review the most recently submitted drafts. Consequently, the new proposed date for a vote is at the Spring Assembly in June of 2020, or if necessary, if there's another delay, during the Fall General Assembly in November next year. Today, in place of the vote, I will provide you with an update on the progress of the pastoral plan or framework. A bit about the history. Allow me to start with a brief summary of the context and history of this document. The first pastoral plan on family ministry was issued by this conference in 1978 and reaffirmed in 1990. Numerous statements, resources, and initiatives have been offered over the years, including our National Pastoral Initiative on Marriage, launched in 2005, and our Pastoral Letter on Marriage in 2009. Following the Synods on the Family, 2014 and 2015, and the Apostolic Exhortation on the Joy of Love, Amoris Laetitia, the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth discussed the possibility of a new pastoral plan to assist the long-term reception and implementation of the fruits of the synods and serve as an important response on our part to Amoris Laetitia. The development of a pastoral plan was included within the bishop's 2017-2020 strategic plan. Followed by a phase of preliminary consultation, the approval of a working outline, the drafting process, and further consultation with several collaborating committees and leaders, the document has seen numerous revisions and is nearly, at least I hope, at its conclusive stage. A finalized draft of the document was shared in April 2019 with 14 committees, subcommittees, to elicit feedback. Key collaborating committees included canonical affairs and church governance, cultural diversity in the church, communications, doctrine, evangelization and catechetics, and pro-life activities. Proximate collaborating committees and offices include Catholic Education, Child and Youth Protection, Justice and Peace and Human Development, Divine Worship, Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs, Migration and Refugee Services, Government Relations, and Religious Liberty. I think we consulted everybody. The challenges facing young people, marriages, and families are many, and our pastoral outreach needs to respond in ever new and engaging ways. A pastoral plan or framework seeks to advance conversation and engagement around strengthening marriage and family life in a spirit of pastoral and missionary conversion on behalf of the gospel of the family. The pastoral plan was always intended to be a framework and resource to assist pastoral planning efforts in dioceses and parishes, and to galvanize leaders and all those who work on behalf of marriage and family life. It was never meant to be a single comprehensive national plan, but a resource towards the development of pastoral plans at the diocesan and eparchial levels. For this reason, the decision was made to change the official title of the document from plan to framework. The pastoral framework will equip dioceses, eparchies, parishes, and those who serve the family with key areas of direction and an adaptable set of principles and strategies for pastoral planning to meet the needs of couples and families at the local level. The primary audience for whom this framework is intended is church leaders, ordained, consecrated, and lay, who serve and minister to and with families. A secondary audience is Christian families who really are the principal agents of the family apostolate through their witness as domestic churches. Structure. The guidelines presented in the current draft of the pastoral framework promote a comprehensive marriage and family ministry plan that aims to do three things: to educate, encourage, and engage the faithful in four core areas or pillars: prayer and relationship with Jesus Christ, formation, accompaniment, and finally, advocacy. The underlying spirit that should animate every effort to educate, encourage, and engage couples and families is a culture of encounter that leads couples and families to the love and mercy of God. In the registration packet, which you received when you arrived at the tables, contains a table of content to which you can refer as I present the structure of the framework. It's kind of a boring white sheet of paper on both sides. Called to the Joy of Love is how it's the heading on the top of the page. So I'm going to review the framework now. The first part of the framework is an introduction that hearkens to the words of Pope Francis, who reminds us that the joy of love experienced by families is also the joy of the church. It then covers the complex realities of families today, the importance of a ministry to and with families, and the Holy Father's call to everyone for a missionary conversion that seeks to connect with the concrete realities of couples and families today. Following the introduction are four pillars for strengthening marriage and family life. As I mentioned, the first pillar is prayer and relationship with Jesus. The goal is to foster in married couples and families a living relationship with the Lord by instilling in them a deep appreciation for prayer and the sacramental life of the church. The second pillar is formation. Its goal is to encourage the human, intellectual, spiritual, and apostolic formation that provides a healthy foundation for marriages and families. The third pillar is accompaniment. Its goal is to develop pastoral strategies that identify and respond to the realities of married couples, families, and those discerning marriage. The fourth pillar is advocacy, with a goal to advance the truths of the human person, marriage, and the family through advocacy in the public square. Each pillar addresses areas or situations of need faced by couples and families today. Following a short description of the situation are suggested ways that a local pastoral plan might educate and encourage the faithful in these circumstances. Finally, pastoral strategies are suggested to engage audiences effectively. The next part speaks of the implementation of a pastoral plan and the need to engage families themselves, the parish community, as a family of families, and the broader collaboration of all God's faithful. Lastly, the conclusion seeks to lift up the Pope's call for ministries and efforts to serve married couples and families. The framework closes by entrusting all ministry and advocacy for families in our country to the protection of the Holy Family. Now, that's a lot of material, a lot of information. It's important that it be implemented. So implementation and communication plans are taking shape now to ensure a successful and effective utilization of the pastoral framework. The plans currently include publishing a resource guide. This guide includes national ministries and programs that assist and support any of the work and initiatives suggested in the framework. It would be updated regularly in an electronic version. We're also encouraging regional convocations, inspired by the convocation experience. These regional convocations would be encouraged as a means of identifying and responding to the specific needs of couples and families by regional districts. We're also going to offer diocesan consultations. A team of USCCB staff, consultants, and experts would provide tailored in-person consultations to dioceses on requests. We're also going to develop a leaders page on the foryourmarriage.org website. This section of the current website will be a dedicated space for leaders in marriage and family ministry to assist their implementation of the framework. In conclusion, the framework is rooted in the insights and evangelizing vision of Pope Francis for families, as expressed in Old Moris Laetitia. We think we've done a pretty good job, and we look forward to the final consultations being finished so we can present the document to you. Your brothers, thank you for your attention. We have time now reserved for discussion. In addition to feedback regarding the document itself, I would be grateful to receive any observations concerning the suggested implementation plan. Your input will be helpful for the committee's ongoing work. So Dominic and Julia, you want to come up here and be with me for any questions we might have? Brothers, do you have any questions, any suggestions, any statements? Or did I wear you out?
So brothers, anyone who has something with you? Cardinal Supich.
Thank you, Archbishop, and I thank you and your committee for bringing this important topic to our assembly. For some time, as you know, in our own conversations, I've asked for a full discussion among us of Amoris Laetitia, because I think it is a very unique document following a synod that has so much to offer us. And so I wonder whether or not it would be important before we do an actual outline or document to really have a discussion among ourselves about Amoris Laetitia and how we read it and understand it, and maybe even to invite competent theologians to help us in that discussion. I think it's such an important and pivotal document in the life of the church that we should take our time and make sure that we clearly understand what it says. And then along those lines, I would encourage that any final document follow the outline, or at least the points of reference that were used in the synod and in the post-synodal document of Amoris Laetitia. And they are, before we do accompaniment, we have to listen, we have to encounter, as the Holy Father says, to listen to where people are, realizing that, as we've heard in some of these days of evangelization, that the Holy Spirit was there before we got there. And that's built on the principle as the Holy Father says in the first paragraphs of Amoris Laetitia, that if you look at salvation history from the beginning of creation all the way to the book of Revelation, God has shown us that he has decided to use the family as a privileged place to reveal himself and to show his action in the world. So should we not look at what's happening in families and dialogue with them to understand what's happening in their life? It's only out of that then we can accompany them. Otherwise, we come with preconceived ideas and notions of what they should be doing. Accompaniment can't be about walking with people and telling them what they should be doing. It has to begin with an encounter. But then there's a final stage after the accompaniment, and that is integration. How do we help these people along the way who aren't perfect, who are in the middle of the road, who are looking for the grace of God to work in their lives and to be patient with them? That's why integration is important. So I would encourage that the committee take a look at those three aspects of Amoris Laetitia: encounter, accompaniment, and integration, for us to have a document that can serve our people. But maybe to take a serious look at scheduling some time among ourselves to have a real discussion about this wonderful historic document of the life of the church.
Thank you, Your Eminence. You know, our committee actually had planned that kind of discussion for the bishops here. We had hoped to do it, I don't know if it was last June or the November before this past June. It was in our suggestion to the leadership, but a lot of things happened in the church and that all disappeared. We got sidetracked by all the issues surrounding Cardinal McCarrick and our response to sexual abuse issues and leadership issues. So we didn't actually get around to having that workshop, but we had planned on it, Your Eminence. Whether it would be good to do that still, you know, I certainly personally would support it because I think we need to have a good, honest discussion among ourselves. Now, in terms of the suggestions you made about the implementation of Amoris Laetitia, I think it's the committee's understanding and feeling that should be done in local circumstances. We can't do those hearings as a conference or it would become a full-time task, but we could certainly do all that you suggested in our diocese, and we'd hope that our pastoral framework would provide the environment for us to do that at home and do it seriously. Because I think, you know, as Pope John Paul II said so famously, everything passes through the family, and I don't know if there's any more important ministry that we could be involved in than the kind of ministry to support, understand, and accompany families that you mentioned. Did you want to add anything to that, staff? She tells me I covered it all, so she knows what needs to be covered.
Bishop Barron, followed by Archbishop Vigneron.
I won't give up the question about having a workshop among ourselves. I'll pass that on to Archbishop Salvatore, who's my replacement, because I think it would be a very important thing to do. I fully support that.
Just a quick suggestion. I like the thoroughness of this treatment. A section of Amoris Laetitia I really appreciated was chapter 7, when the Pope goes into the family as a school of virtue. I think it's a very rich way to approach the church's moral teaching and the responsibility of a family, and to show the form of the Christian life in action. And I just found in my own teaching of Amoris Laetitia, it's a very creative way, I think, to get into all those questions, and people respond to it. So I might just suggest family as a school of virtue is a good category.
Thank you very much, Bishop. Any response? If you want to respond, just tap me on the shoulder.
I think that's a great suggestion. I think that the life of virtue does permeate the document, but taking up chapter 7 in maybe a more focused way would be good. And that also that as the document exists now, the pattern of encounter, accompany, and integration is there. But we'll read back through it to make sure that that structure is prominent.
Archbishop Vigneron, followed by Bishop Soto.
Archbishop, thank you very much for this. You asked for suggestions. One that we're finding in the Archdiocese of Detroit that we need help with is forming families to be evangelizing to other families. I would put a very high priority on that. I think in terms of reaching out to people who are sort of beyond the usual audiences that we deal with. I think getting families to be evangelizing and help them to know how to do that, I think that would be really good for my diocese to have those ideas and resources developed by the committee.
Thank you very much, Bishop. We'll certainly take that in consideration.
Bishop Soto, followed by Bishop Elizondo.
Thank you very much for this report and for the direction that this is taking. And I'm sure maybe in some ways this is going to get more in, come out in the when the framework is presented. But just to bring these concerns to light, of we can get into the perspective that we're going to offer these services at the parish and people will come, you know, and we'll invite people to come. And I think in particularly with this initiative that that we do need to have a more assertive missionary where we go out and that we have to consciously and deliberately think of where are the contexts where we need to be that are not the traditional places where we do family catechesis and outreach. And so I would encourage perhaps some suggestions, language that really pushes us in that regard and brings a more kind of missionary perspective to how this framework, because I think there are many families who are just not going to come to the threshold of the church unless we go out to them, and we have to, I think we need to think concretely about how to do that. And one, partners in that should be many of our Catholic charities, Catholic social services, our Catholic hospitals, and how can we better work with them to bring the values of the family for many of the people that they serve, and then also lastly, the movements, the charismatics, marriage encounter, Crucio. I mean that if they become protagonists with us in making this plan effective, that they would be wonderful messengers and missionaries.
Thank you for your creative suggestions. Yeah, the Neo-Catechumenal Way is awfully wonderfully good at promoting family life at the center of their evangelization. Do you have any responses?
Bishop Elizondo?
I think there's a response, one more response, Eminence.
Sure. Yes, thank you, Bishop. We have, we've really tried to pinpoint at least many different scenarios of families in need. The single parent family, the families of migrants and refugees, families with children with disabilities, families who have lost a member of their family, whether that's a spouse or a child. So we've tried to really cover as many scenarios as possible and not provide absolute solutions, of course, but reaching those families in the peripheries or where they're at, and if they're not in the parish, to welcome them there. And to the point of the missionary discipleship, we've tried to really emphasize that families themselves are called to be those missionaries.
Yeah, and if I could just follow up that, then how do we bring this right into the refugee centers, and how do you get into the jails, and what are we doing to when we get into the courthouse? And so it's really thinking concretely about those settings and how do we enter into there.
Bishop Elizondo, followed by Archbishop Lori.
Thank you very much, Archbishop, for all your work with the family, especially. I would like to go along with the lines of Cardinal Supich, and now, right now that Bishop Soto mentioned, the movements, the ecclesial movement, is particularly marriage encounter that have been proven it's themselves a very strong Catholic and foundation for families, especially among the Latinos, with all the growth of the Hispanic presence throughout the whole country. Myself, I have been involved with Marriage Encounter in a national level for many, many years. And we have used the document for congresses and meditations and stuff and retreats. And it's a wonderful asset, absolutely. And it's particularly, as I said, because of if Latino families have that unity and a lot of children too. And so it's a wonderful asset to evangelize and to keep on working on growing in faith. So thank you for all your work, and I encourage everyone to use the means that we already have it, because Marriage Encounter is everywhere, in every single language, but especially among the Latinos, and we have that foundation already in our parishes that we can use as a great tool for evangelizing everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop.
Archbishop Laurie.
Thank you so much, Archbishop Shepu. Thank you so much. This framework is good. I sit on the committee, on various committees, so I've had a chance to look at it, and it's really very, very good. I'd just like to maybe recapture some threads of previous conversations we've had this week, particularly the one about gun violence and the one that speaks about the extreme poverty of our urban centers. And if I look at the statistics about the urban center here in Baltimore, for example, one of the glaring social problems is that there is such a tiny percentage of intact families. And truly that has a lot to do with the violence, educational underachievement. It has a lot to do, of course, with all kinds of crime and unhappiness. I know that one document can't do everything, but a lot of pastors who serve so devotedly, even heroically, in the inner city, I'm sure would love to have some opportunity of figuring out or some direction for how do you build the family in those kinds of circumstances when there's so much disadvantage all around you. Thank you.
Excellent.
Bishop O'Connell.
We've had a lot of discussion over the last 2 days about all the people who are leaving us. And in this context of talking about the family, we have to remember there's one group that is coming towards us, that comes to us. And these are the people who come to bring their children for baptism. They're making two huge steps towards us in this society. First of all, they're having children when many people are choosing not to have children, and they're choosing to get their child baptized when many people are choosing not to. An extraordinary opportunity for us. But I think, sadly, we're not recognizing that opportunity. So I think we should certainly think about and call for a renewed outreach to all those families when they have a new child, it's a new moment in their family, they're forming a new family. It's time when they're, no matter where they stand in regards our faith, they're hopeful for something better for their child. So visiting them and reaching out to them, bringing any of the resources we have in our parishes to reach out to them in a very personal way, I think will bring us great fruit of that sacrament itself.
Thank you very much for that reminder, Bishop.
Archbishop Shepu, I have a point to raise.
Oh, good. Well, that doesn't happen very often.
My diocese has a dubious distinction of having more prisons in it than any other diocese in Texas. And dealing with certain family issues, the perhaps unsung group that does incredible amounts of what I'd call most basic family ministries in jails are permanent deacons. Mm-hmm. And I do not think we should overlook
the contributions we might get through them when it comes to what we call more extreme situations of families. And prison, you can't get more extreme, you know, or poor than being in jail. And I think that their prison ministries should be looked to. Maybe we can encourage permanent deacons to do that, not that we shouldn't encourage others. But I have found them, once they get involved in it, they're really very, very dedicated to what I call the family end of the prison, of the prisoner.
So, well, thank you. That was a very good suggestion. And welcome back to the ordinary life of the conference.
Yes, yeah. Coming soon, in a theater near you, I tell you. Anyone else?
Archbishop Nauman.
Archbishop Nauman.
Thanks, Archbishop Chaput, and we were grateful for what I think this framework will provide to us. I just, in our archdiocese, we've made strengthening marriage and family life a major priority. And one of the things that we found is like online resources for families, for couples to that they can use in the home to strengthen their marriage. There's a group in our diocese called School of Love that a lot of their ministry is based on that, because oftentimes it's hard to get couples to carve out time to go elsewhere. And so I think that's something at the national level that could be done, that could be a great resource. I was also wondering, there was an Episcopalian priest who brought to my attention Italian priest by the name of Don Renzo Bonetti, and he has a program called Mistero Grande, which this Episcopalian thinks is the best thing he's ever seen in terms of marriage formation. And I'm not sure, we've been trying to look into it, but my Italian's not very good. So I don't know if any of the staff is aware of this, and if it's a resource that we might be able to tap into.
And I think some of my staff wants to respond.
Okay.
Go ahead, please finish.
The only other thing I was going to say, you know, when I was first ordained a priest, a lot of our concern was about people marrying too young. And now we have this delay of marriage, which brings its own set of challenges in that. And I wonder, too, if that's something we'll be able to address in the framework, because I think it's one of the things Pope Francis has encouraged young people not to delay commitment. And so I think that's something too. I hope we can find ways to invite couples to not be afraid of the commitment. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
So Archbishop Nauman, just to note that in the United States, it was begun by a Protestant or a family of Protestant organizations, and it's called the Amore Project, and that was taking up of the Mistero Grande initiative, which is a lay movement in Italy, founded by Don Renzo Bonetti, who at one point in time was the president of, the executive director of family life at the Catholic Conference of Rome. And I could just note that in the Diocese of Harrisburg, there have been some initial initiatives to see if this this type of, it prepares families to be missionaries. It looks to those leadership couples who have a deep faith and prepares them to kind of be domestic churches in their communities and attract others in their communities, Catholic and non-Catholic, in a spirit of hospitality in their homes to pray, to offer up intentions for one another. And so it's very concrete and very direct. And so that's something to consider.
Bishop Conlon. Bishop Conlon.
Two thoughts. Cardinal DiNardo's reference to prisons reminds me that, I know you've got this huge list of accompaniments, but families who have someone in prison or someone who's been deported also suffer difficulties and need special accompaniment. This is going to be a wonderful program that you're laying out here. But it's like grandma preparing this wonderful Thanksgiving dinner, but most of the family members are alienated from the family and nobody's gonna show up for dinner. We have this big problem of, you know, the vast majority of people who have some identity, self-identity as Catholics, who are not engaged in the life of the church. They're never gonna find out about any of this, and we're never gonna touch them with this. And I'm thinking of Bishop Coyne's regular admonition that in this day and age of digital communication, we need to find ways of reaching out. And this might be an excellent way of reaching out to people who aren't engaged regularly in the life of the church and say, look, the church is here to serve the needs of families and married couples. You know, we want you to be in touch with us so that we can support you in this aspect of your life.
Thank you, Bishop.
Is there anyone else? No, I don't know this.
Do my friends here have any additional things to say? I think we're finished then. Dominic wants to say one more thing.
So one more thing is that we hope to have a draft before you in June. And so it's already moved through many hands, but the things that you've said today, we would like to go back and make sure that they're responded to in the document. So we have still some more work to do, but we look forward to this coming June.
And they've done wonderful work, worked very, very hard. I'm grateful to the whole staff. They're all sitting down here. So thank you very much, one and all.
Thank you, Archbishop Chaput, and your work as chair up till now. Thanks to all the committee and massive amount of material, obviously, in a stage for a further articulation. It's great. Thanks. I think at this point we'll probably take a break, a 20-minute break. Be back at 3:30.